Hello and welcome to Talk About Jazz with Doug Hall. I'm your host, Doug Hall, and today our guest is Fall Ray, who is a recent graduate of the Berklee College of Music. Fall is a jazz saxophonist, flautist, pianist, sometime bassist, and also plays an assortment of woodwinds. We're very excited to have Fall here with us for our interview. Hello, Fall.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. We're glad to have you. Fall also already in his career has been a band leader, I will say, of a trio, a quartet, and most recently has formed a band by the name of Light Hope. And we will talk a bit about the evolution of that band and their music a little bit later in the interview. At this stage, we're going to transition into listening to two cuts from Fall's debut recording by the same name, Fall. The first cut is entitled Gray. And Fall, if you wouldn't mind, just set that up a little bit for us before we listen to it.
Sure. So Gray is a piece I wrote in, I'd say, 2019. And it's half of a written piece. It has a written introduction, but it's mostly a graphic score of a thunderstorm kind of coming and growing. And and it has to do a lot with like personal growth, overcoming personal challenges, whatever they may be.
Okay. So, yeah. Great. Wow. Okay, well, we're going to listen to a segment of Gray. I think in terms of the atmosphere of it, the kind of moodiness, the sort of emotional and kind of speaking out on an instrument, and the, of course, the interplay that I hear between you and the pianist, kind of speaking to each other. I hear the accents of the drums and the cymbals in the background. So I really feel the atmospheric nature of this piece.
Thank you.
Yeah. We didn't manage to hear the ending, but there is kind of a crescendo, it seems, that builds a bit to a climax at the ending, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the finish as well.
Yeah.
Well,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I definitely recommend giving that whole take a listen. It's definitely a slow burn, as it was intended to be.
Right. Yeah. Good descriptive word, slow burn. Yeah. Well, let's see.
That's one of my favorite pieces on the record.
Oh, okay.
Because of that. And in the studio, we had played it a few times, and then we played it a few times afterwards because we ended up touring after the fact. So we played this song a few times on the tour, and it was always just a very unique experience every time. Because the song is so like improvisatory in nature. There's a sketch of a tune, but it's really like we're kind of feeling it on the spot and carrying it to wherever it ends up going. But the ending is always very like powerful and impactful to me.
Right. Yeah. I had the same feeling with it. It grows on you, and there's a building to it. Well, let's move on to our next selection. That is Earth Day. And again, we'll play approximately 2 minutes of that release. Do you want to set that up at all?
Sure. Yeah. Earth Day is probably my favorite song on the album, like actually.
Okay.
It's a composition written on Earth Day in 2020. Wow. So we were freshly locked up during COVID. You know, it kind of has dual meaning to me, but in essence, it kind of is a mix of like mourning for the earth and what's going on with climate change, and you know, kind of just a cry about that and living as a person on earth during kind of what we're experiencing with climate change and climate disaster. And at the same time, it's kind of about family trauma as well.
Okay. All right.
Because if you've experienced family trauma or kind of have like a missing parent or something like that, the feelings of like, oh, why is this happening? Why are you doing this? Is very like similar to me.
Right. It's certainly, that's about the deepest and most traumatic emotion that humans have.
Yeah. So I hope it's both like an acknowledgement of grief and a symbol of like hope that you can be resilient and, you know, be happy afterwards.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's queue up and have a listen to Earth Day. I certainly hear a quiet tone, somewhat of a peaceful tone, and almost the horn is singing to us. I made some notes that I kind of try to follow as I try to put what I'm feeling into words. The phrasing, and again, the interplay and with the piano and accompaniment, I feel there's kind of this relationship, sharing of time and space with both instruments, the horn and the piano. And there is, not to characterize or label an actual, you know, mammal or being, but there is some singing that reflects almost a bird song in some of the flutters and some of the notes that you're playing. So it's a very contemplative piece, even though, as you say, it's in a sense a meditation, a way of addressing grief. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, thank you. Very kind words.
Yeah. So I just thought I'd reflect back on your Berklee experience, as I have with other Berklee graduate students in the past. Basically an open question, in the sense that you're both going to have had a musical experience, and then you're going to have had a personal experience. Mm-hmm. And can you talk a little bit about kind of the memories that you have of both, that kind of maybe highlight the musical experience and then a personal experience?
About Berklee.
Yeah, about Berklee in particular.
Sure. Yeah. So let's see. Well, my first experience with Berklee was in 2018, before I started college. I was here doing the 5-week summer camp.
Oh, okay.
So that's where I was doing this program led by Terry Lynn Carrington. So that's where I met Thomas. And I also met bunch of incredible peers of mine that I'm still friends with today in that same group of people. So that was the start. And then I ended up going to college somewhere else for the first year, and ended up coming back to Berklee to transfer here in 2020.
Right.
So since then, I would say that probably the best part by far about Berklee for me was being a part of the Jazz and Gender Justice, the Institute of Jazz and Gender Justice, which is run by Terry Lynn Carrington, and also Asia Burrell Wood and Chris Davis, amongst many other amazing people.
Yes.
And musically, you know, just being around them alone was inspiration enough every single day, you know, to take classes with these people, to learn from them. Part of this was on Zoom as well, and it still applies even back then. And then to today, being a graduate, it's like they have provided so much inspiration to me and have really, really taught me how to be an artist. And
okay,
you know, they've really taught me that that's a very personal connection, being an artist, and what you actually make art about, like what is the reason that we do this. And you know, I'm just very grateful for that, as well as you know, coming to Berklee, talking about like the personal connection I have, especially with JGJ,
right,
is that, you know, I came to Berklee, I eventually came out as non-binary, so I use they, them pronouns, and I ended up changing my name and all this stuff. So that all took place with like the unconditional support of JGJ, of these mentors who,
right,
you know, are some of my heroes within the music. And then to, you know, be able to just confide to them about, you know, sure, deeply personal things, and to receive support, and the support that they give to, right, all their students who go through that.
It's interesting because I've interviewed probably 5 or 6 Berklee graduates, and they all have a very warm, supportive experience and find their mentorship, whether it's official or unofficial, and their relationship with with the faculty there to be really the most special part of their learning. And that's wonderful to hear time and time again. It's wonderful to hear. I know certainly, obviously, some of the faculty members from simply seeing them perform. Of course, Terry Lynn Carrington is a household name and an established legend in modern jazz drumming. And many others that go on and on. Curious, now at a student level, you're interacting with other students. They approach music in a different way. They come from a different background. They're playing different instruments. What would you say is your takeaway? Maybe you could just pick a particular example of something that was really valuable that you learned from another student, another musician at Berklee, if there was such a connection.
Yeah, I need to think about that.
Or it can even be, you know, several people that came together and therefore that's how you formed a group or a trio.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that comes to mind is kind of being a side person in other people's projects. I was lucky, especially within the first 2 years of Berklee. I played on quite a few of my friends' recordings that they were doing for Global Jazz, which eventually turned into albums of their own. So, you know, getting to just work with other people, learn their music, especially people, you know, from completely different countries. There's such a deep love of music that I just distinctly remember from them, where it's like, it kind of reminds you while, you know, trying to be a musician, but also trying to be an adult living here, trying to pay the bills,
right?
All this stuff that kind of keeps you from just the creative aspect of the music. It really brings you back into that. And you're like, oh yeah, actually we're doing something super important. It's healing, you know? I just had this experience like last week. I played on someone's recording and I was like, wow, you know, yeah, like music at the end of the day, always it is there to heal and support you, you know? So I'd say just being reminded of that through the work ethic of these amazing people that I've met at Berklee has kind of been like a huge takeaway for me.
Yeah, well, I like the way you answered that. It allows you to kind of step into that world for a moment. And very special environment, the times that I've been there in a more intimate way. And question, I was just curious that I had a forum where this question came up, and here's a perfect place to ask it. So it's based on... Someone at one of the major jazz websites threw up the question, said, so I hear from younger musicians or let's say early musicians trying to establish themselves that they always seem to be compared to the legends of the past. So somebody says, oh, you sound like you've got some Coltrane in you there, or you're singing a little bit like Sarah Vaughan, or wow, you guys could put together an ensemble and why aren't you playing a little bit of Duke Ellington? So what, from your take, what is the, in a sense, the structure of that past? And then how does that relate to your presence? I know it's a big question, but I think you know where I'm going with that, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, a couple things. I think as we study jazz music, which is Black American music,
there is
an incredibly beautiful lineage to be studied.
Yes.
That I think is important and we must study if we are to play this music and respect it.
Right.
And understand what it's actually about, then we need to study it. And that's just, you know, that's just the foundation. That's your foundation to move forward in any kind of music, actually. is to understand, you know, the political implications of the music, where it came from,
right,
why it was made, why does it sound the way it does. And then as specifically a jazz musician or a jazz saxophonist, then you go back and you study Coltrane, mm-hmm, and Charlie Parker and all these people to, you know, further understand, which I think is actually a very like intimate process, like specifically like transcription,
right,
okay, as a way of learning, is very intimate, because, you know, I'm never going to get to meet John Coltrane as right, much as I'd love to, but I have the opportunity to literally play with him, to yeah, learn his music and play along with him and
right,
get what I can get out of that. And I think that's beautiful. I think that's so beautiful and intimate and special and very spiritual way of like connecting back. Right. So I really do believe in the lineage and that it has to be studied if you're taking this seriously.
Thank you. That's a very, very full answer. And I liked your talk. I liked your relationship to kind of connecting with somebody who is gone in a sense. Yeah. I don't read music. I'm an amateur guitarist. I'm fascinated by jazz because I feel every time I'm kind of in the shallow water, I fall into the deep end and I'm lost. But it teaches you so much. And if you can read somebody's transcription, what did Coltrane write in this song? Here are the notes, the whole flow of it, the whole page. That's part of who he is, right? Mm-hmm. That's part of who he is, what he's written down there. Instead of just writing a letter to you, he's written this page of music, yeah, coming out of him, not somebody else. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then it goes further, you know, because with like Love Supreme, you know, Love Supreme is about overcoming addiction, yep, finding yourself, finding this connection to the divine spirit, whatever that may be to you. And, you know, becoming a better person that he had to become for his family, you know, right, and that's like, that's heavy. That's beautiful. One more thing I wanted to say about that.
Yeah.
So all that being said, to the part of like where, you know, these students are playing and, you know, they sound just like Coltrane or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that everyone goes through because it's kind of how we're taught to learn the music.
Got it.
It's, okay, it's like, oh, we got to copy, you know, the people that came before us, which
right,
I think there's a difference between studying and copying. We're talking about improvised music
at the end of the day. Okay, right.
And for me, what I've kind of come to see is that if I play a show and someone comes up to me afterwards and says, wow, like you really sound like Coltrane or Walter Smith, which is, Walter is someone I was like so obsessed with. Mm-hmm. And I think I learned how to sound like him to a point where people were, you know, telling me that. But now when I hear that, I'm like, oh man, I gotta like connect to what I sound like.
Right. Exactly. I think that's a perfect sentence of it.
Yeah. Because I'm not here to, you know, I'm not here to do something that someone else has done.
Exactly.
Because it's, you know, they've already done it and I'm not that person.
Right.
I'm my own person with my own unique voice. And that is what I'm working on developing so that anytime I play, people know it's me.
Yes.
Because it's personal.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I think you answered that really remarkably well. The full answer is always better than a shortened version. The thought about it's wonderful. You know, I don't have a comparison to make as you are a musician, I'm a writer. So I guess it's wonderful for somebody to come up and say, wow, your sentences are so clear and they sound like the prose of Hemingway. I can go, well, yes. I'll take that compliment. But I think I have my own writing style, actually. I think I write in my own style, but I'll take the compliment. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that being said, like your influences are always going to shine through, I think.
Right.
It's not a bad thing at all.
Bad thing. Right. Exactly.
But, you know, yeah, it's kind of just this line that we got to wrap as artists, I think.
Well, well put. I'm just going to close by asking you, maybe you want to tell us a little bit about your latest band. Is it Light Hope, correct?
Yes. So Light Hope was a band that I put together for a show that we did last month at Firehouse in Worcester.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Very beautiful venue. You guys should all go there. They have tons of different music going on every night, pretty much. So it was a band I was trying to put together, a kind of like unique instrumentation. So the instrumentation was piano, bass, drums, and then myself on soprano sax, and then Angela Varo on the violin and Sarah Nichols on the cello.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting addition, sort of untraditional jazz instruments.
Yeah, and you know, just trying to pick people specifically too that I'm like, I haven't played with you in a while, or I've never played with you.
Right.
Let me make this happen.
Right.
Let me write music for us so that we can play it together. And like we rehearsed twice and played the show, and it went really well. The set is up on my YouTube channel if anyone would like to see it. It's definitely a band I'd love to like continue in the future.
Well, look, we're going to put up some of your social media when we produce this recording, and certainly I'm going to seek you out at some point to see you perform, maybe down at in the Boston area or elsewhere. Do you want to talk about any upcoming performances that you have in the area that the audience might be interested in hearing about?
So there's one happening on July 8th, I think at 10 p.m.
Okay.
At the Jungle. The Jungle. July 8th.
Okay.
At the Jungle at 10 p.m. I'll be doing duo improvised music with Angela Varo on violin.
Oh, wow.
And so on August 10th at the Mission Hills Jazz Festival, I believe. I'll be playing with a great drummer, Ivana Kutesta.
Okay.
And she'll be holding a set of her original music, and she is gearing up to release a new album. Okay. I think this month or next month. And so I'm super excited about that.
Wow. Good. Well, lots on your plate to look forward to. That's great. So, Fall, we've come to the end of our interview period, and I've really enjoyed our conversation together, particularly just thoughts of jazz and influences and where your music is coming from. So, again, thank you so much for your time today, and best of good fortune moving forward with whatever musical projects are to come next.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. It was great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you as well, Fall. Take care.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.